back with you later. Thank you so much.
Every Monday night at 8 o'clock, you can hear this voice alerting you that
you are about to cross the border.
And then follow the footsteps to a two-hour-long sustained environment of uninterrupted sonic art or new electronic, experimental, or postmodern music. Audio that breaks and rewrites the rules to create entirely new worlds of sound. Where will you be on Mondays at 8 when the door slams shut? Here on KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Sexual Assault Resource Center's 40th anniversary fundraiser on Thursday, April 27th at 5 p.m. at Echo Trust in Portland. The Sexual Assault Resource Center was founded in 1977 to promote social justice by eliminating sexual violence in our community through education, support, and advocacy. Their fundraiser features Moody Little Sister and DJ Mr. Moo Moo and more. Again, that's the Sexual Assault Resource Center's 40th anniversary fundraiser on Thursday, April 27th at 5 p.m. at Echo Trust, 721 Northwest 9th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Amanda Hill, and I'm here with my co-host, Jamie Partridge.
Hey, Amanda.
Hey. Tonight, we're talking with about Latino wood framers organizing for power. Our guests are Marcus Rodriguez from Local 146 and Jason Scheckler, Vice President of the Carpenters Union, Local 1503 here in the Portland area. Before we get into the story of the wood framers, let's learn a little bit about our guests. Marcus, let's start with you. You've worked as a drywall carpenter, non-union, and now you're an organizer with the Carpenters Union on the wood framers campaign. What brought you into the union?
So I joined the union a little bit over 5 years ago. I was a non-union drywaller. I worked for my mom and pop shop for my dad from a really young age. Weekends, days off from school, that's what I was doing. That was all fine and dandy until I had kids and a wife and no pension, no benefits. So my whole drive to get in the union was just to kind of better our quality of life. So 5 years ago, I came back down to Portland from Bellingham, Washington, and I went and pretty much begged for a job at PCI, Performance Contracting, Inc. They obliged me. I started working there. I was with them for almost a year, and as just a drywaller, just a rank file drywaller, and they turned me into a foreman. And I was a foreman there for 4 years. What made me kind of get interested in the council, working for the council, being an organizer, was just growing up, I'd seen a lot of exploitation of workers, of immigrant workers especially. And I just wanted to be in a position to try to help more people. That was my biggest goal of becoming a council staff member, was just having a broader playing field to kind of help more people. So that's what I was trying to do.
Great. Well, Jason, you're an officer, and now you're working as an organizer on this Wood Framers campaign. How did you get active in the union? What role did you play in turning the union toward organizing wood framers?
Well, I got involved with the union. I've been a member of the Carpenters Union for almost 17 years now. I started off in a wood shop building bunk beds, and then I went to residential construction, all non-union. And pretty much my father was a very strong unionist, and he told me if I was going to be a carpenter, I should join the Carpenters Union. So I did, and I've been a member for about 17 years now. What got me interested in the Wood Framers campaign is I've seen for so long that this section of the market has been not organized since. It seems like probably, from what I hear, the union stopped focusing on that back in the late 70s, early 80s. We don't control much of that market anymore. And it's some of the most dangerous and exploitive work in our industry right now.
Can you explain a little bit what a wood framer does?
Well, they frame walls, frame the roof, up many stories high. Sometimes you walk what's called a top plate, which would be the top of the wall, where you walk that to get the next floor going. You got to drop the joists in. There's a lot of dangerous things in wood framing that it's just been traditionally in the non-union safeties just kind of look the other way and get the job done, which is a huge problem. We've seen that market also go to what they call piece rate, which is by how much square footage you can put up, which sometimes doesn't even add up to minimum wage. And that market, you know, especially with the big building boom in the Portland area, pretty much we have sewed up the commercial concrete where you have the parking garage and a couple levels of concrete. And then above those next stories, it will be wood framing, almost 100% non-union in this town. And they're carpenters, and we need to stand up, and we need to start organizing these other members of the construction industry that are also carpenters and take back that market.
Before we get too far into the talking about the Wood Framers campaign, tell us a little bit more about how you, what role you played in turning the union toward organizing this group of workers. I mean, obviously they've been non-union for a while. I mean, something happened.
I think what's happened mostly is we've seen that market change more than just high rise construction. I think there's a lot of carpenters that have originally come out of the non-union wood framing market and then joined the union and end up doing concrete forms. We saw just the exploitation that goes on in our market and the loss of market share. There's been discussions about why aren't we going after that market, and finally, we've come to the conclusion that if we don't start organizing the whole market of carpenter craft work, that we're going to start losing more sections of the market. And I think the tide's starting to change on that, and we're starting to actually look into more markets that I feel that the union has abandoned over the years.
Marcus, tell our listeners about the general situation of wood framers and drywallers within the Portland construction industry. Where are they working? Is it commercial? Is it residential? Who they work for? Are they subcontractors or body brokers? And kind of talk to us a little bit about what body brokers are. How they get paid, by the piece or cash? And is there a problem with wage theft?
Yeah, so right now what we're seeing in this huge construction boom is within the market, the drywall market and the wood framing market, they're all over the place. I mean, you can pretty much drive around town anywhere and you will see wood framed apartment buildings going up. That means sheetrockers, drywallers are coming in right after those walls get put up to start covering them with drywall. As far as contractors, you know, there's a lot of contractors out there right now. I'm not going to name any particularly. There's five huge wood frame contractors that kind of control that market right now, you know, so they're real strong in there. And then the drywall, non-union drywall shops, there's another four or five real strong ones right now. Who they work for? The brokers, the body brokers. So that's like a labor broker. Those are guys that are coming in that might have access to 15, 20 guys that they distribute out to other companies. So somebody will call them for five guys, 10 guys. They'll send them out. The broker will typically get a piece rate for the work that they're performing. He will then distribute a cash payment to these guys if he feels like it's in his best interest, which right now, the wage theft that's going on is absolutely horrendous. You would think with the boom right now that you'd be able to go out and just kind of like, you know, well, write your own check and this is how much I want. It's almost the complete opposite within these non-union shops right now, where we're seeing these guys, they're going out there and they're they're just getting abused. They're getting exploited.
So would you say that maybe the government's getting abused on this as well because there's no taxes being paid, no Social Security, et cetera?
Oh, most definitely. Okay. You know, a lot of footage rates like this, when they do this, there's lots of ways to, you know, kind of live above the law doing that kind of stuff, you know. It's a pretty sketchy deal. And it really hurts the workers and their families, you know, because these guys are out there busting their hump every day, all day, for pennies on the dollar a lot of times. You know, they're not getting it. And what we're seeing more often now, we do work in a lot of wage theft cases, is that guys, instead of going and fighting for the money they've lost, there's so much work right now that they might leave that broker that they were working for, jump with another one because they're more likely to get paid from him the following week instead of chasing the money. So they're just letting it go. And these guys are predators. They're coming in and they know that, so they take advantage of it.
So are they dealing with workers that are, you know, in fear of their immigration status?
That's a tactic we see a lot, is that sometimes you have undocumented workers on these job sites and, you know, they'll say, hey, do it or I'll call ICE, you know. That if you don't do it, you can't go work somewhere else because you are undocumented and nobody else is going to hire you. You know, they threaten them with all sorts of things. I've seen, you know, in my history, I've seen some pretty incredible things that people will say to people, just totally demeaning and just horrible. I mean, I've seen workers from Guatemala come up here and they pretty much mortgage away their lives to come here. They give away their property. Their families are held hostage back in Guatemala until their coyotes are paid. A lot of times they'll settle on a certain amount, and by the time they get here, they've doubled it. You know, it's incredible.
Can you explain what a coyote is?
A coyote would be someone who would help someone cross a border that's undocumented. I mean, that's honestly what it is. It breaks down to that. So
they prey on people.
Yeah, they prey on people. they're pretty horrible creatures.
So this is also the same kind of labor broking system that farmers and ranchers use in getting farm workers from Mexico and Central America. And some of these same body brokers were doing it in the agriculture are also now doing it in construction, right?
Yeah, definitely. Most definitely. That was kind of where I was going with that too, with you. A lot of them did leave the farming market, you know, and got into construction because there's more money to be made. That's what it boiled down to. It's really where it's at. There's more money to be made. There's a big, huge market, and there's booms going on. So just, you know, preying on people.
Yeah, and we have also seen it to the point where the coyotes are hooked up with the labor brokers, and the coyotes are bringing people across the border for a cash payment and promise of a job with these labor brokers who are exploiting them. Sometimes when they talk with the union, their families are threatened back home by the same coyotes that are connected to the labor brokers. Mm. It's a vicious cycle of trying to organize these workers, and we're finally just starting to build a trust with immigrant workers. Just for the record, our job as carpenters is to organize all carpenters. It doesn't matter if you have documents or not. You're welcome to be a member of our union, because that's our job, is to organize carpenters and stop the exploitation that's been going on in the industry here in Portland specifically.
So how have you been able to break down the barriers? I mean, there's a distrust, racial immigration differences. How have you been able to get past some of that?
We've really had to prove to these workers that we are there for them. We're standing up for them every day. You know, we're building that trust just by showing up every day, being at these meetings. You know, Jason comes to these wood framing meetings. He doesn't speak Spanish. You know, the meetings are conducted 100% in Spanish, very few English speakers there. And him being there and showing those guys, like, hey, I care about you guys. I want to help you achieve these goals that you're trying to do. That's what it is. He does that every month. Month in, month out, he's there, he's helping, you know. And we have a lot of other organizers that work for us that are there doing the same thing. So it's a lot of hard work. That's how you do that.
Yeah, and I think also there's, you know, there's been some changes in the Carpenters Union. You know, we've passed resolutions against specifically to mobilize our membership against racist and fascist groups, and trying to bring the conversation to a membership that is predominantly white construction workers, not all, but predominantly, and explain to our members at the same time, like, why it's important that we organize all workers into our union, whether they have papers or not, because it brings up the wages of all workers. And also with this resolution we passed, it's on our website. We'll give it to you at the end of the show here, but it also says that we need to actively come out against racism, anti-immigrant attacks, and we've been doing that lately. We've supported immigrant rights actions. We're trying to build connections with particularly Pecun, and trying to build
Pecun. Explain who Pecun is.
Pecun's the farm workers union.
Okay.
And we've been trying to rebuild that trust, which is going to take a long time to rebuild, and at the same time trying to educate our members on the reasons why we need to organize all workers in our industry into our union, regardless of status.
So despite language differences, cultural, racial differences, you've been showing up not only in helping people with conditions of wage theft, for example, but also showing up for other kinds of immigrant rights actions.
Yes, we've supported VOS with trying to...
VOS, who is?
VOS is the day laborers organization, where they're organized people on the street corner to fight wage theft from the probably even some of the same labor brokers that we have to deal with sometimes. You know, we've worked with them so they can keep their space there. We've come out against the ICE raids.
ICE. Tell them, or remind our listeners who ICE is.
Immigration Customs Enforcement.
Right on.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry about all the acronyms.
It's
an acronym filled world.
So for those of you who have just tuned in, this is Labor Radio, KBOO Portland. We're talking with Marcus Rodriguez and Jason Scheckler of the Carpenters Union about organizing Latino immigrant wood framers.
So, Marcus, I know that you're working especially hard on wage theft, but I would imagine that safety is actually a very big issue in this campaign as well, because if you're undocumented, you're afraid to even complain about a safety issue. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, a lot of these workers, like you said, they are afraid. They're afraid for a lot of reasons, but safety on a lot of these job sites within the wood framing industry, in the drywall industry, it's absolutely atrocious. The hours that some of these men have to work on a day-in, day-out basis without getting paid overtime, skipping breaks, working through lunches, you know, really poor access to any kind of quality safety gear, if they even get any. You know, talking about harnesses and yo-yos and this and that. You know, typical things that a union carpenter would take for granted. These guys don't even get access to. And then the training on top of that. These guys don't know how to operate a lot of the machinery that they're put to work on, you know, which can cause accidents or damage to, you know, person or property. It's really outrageous how they just run unchecked. You know, a lot of these companies, their motto, you know, for safety is you're fired before you hit the floor.
Wow.
You know, that's kind of where it is. It's that bad.
It's a very common slogan.
Yeah.
What does it mean?
You're fired before you hit the ground. You didn't work for me. You fall. You weren't working for me.
Yeah. You were off the job.
Yeah.
Who's this guy on my job?
It's a common term in construction.
I've seen a few articles recently around immigrant workers that have been hurt on the job and the troubles they've gone through. Are they part of your campaign, or is that just a coincidence that this is out there on a wider basis?
It's all over the place. I don't necessarily think that, you know, any of those guys kind of fall into our campaign right now, but it's nothing new, which is the thing. I love that people are finding out about these things. I don't like that they're happening, but right. people are really starting to see that it's happening, and it's gone on for a long time. You know, back when I was non-union, the things that some of these men do, it's outrageous. It's incredible. Like, you know, walking on 2x4s as planks, you know, instead of having some kind of setup, scaffolding or something, they're walking on a 2x4, 20 feet in the air. You know, the thing's bowing in the middle and there's a man bouncing on it doing his work, you know, and some of these guys don't even think anything of it. It's just they've been brainwashed to accept that as the norm. There isn't safety. I'm being safe. I'm not trying to get hurt. That's what they've been taught, yeah. you know, and complain about it. Hey, I don't feel safe doing that. Get out of here. I'll get somebody else to do it.
Yeah, wow. You're hurt. You're laid off.
Yeah.
You're gone. You're fired.
Yeah. And no workers' comp.
No workers' comp. No. Well, yeah. And sometimes they're scared to make a workers' comp claim.
Are mm-hmm. some of these workers classified as independent contractors as opposed to employees? Mm-hmm.
I think that happens too, but more so how Marcus was explaining the labor broker would usually be the independent contractor, yeah. and then he would have bid the work by the square footage, and then he hires five other people that don't have the independent contractor's license, and he pays them cash, so he's making the square footage off of these workers and paying them less. It's how the system works. And sometimes those labor brokers are hooked up with the coyotes that brought people across the border. There's a whole circle of exploitation that goes on in the construction market. Like and the buildings that you see being built all over town, fancy condos, all that, there's workers being extremely exploited in this town. It has to stop.
So tell our listeners about this campaign, some of the details, the nuts and bolts that you've been in organizing the wood framers for union recognition, for better wages, benefits, working conditions. What and how are you going about it?
Well, the market, especially in the wood frame, is so heavily non-unionized that the only way to win working conditions or a union, which I can't talk about the whole campaign exactly right now, is to build a movement with those workers, a movement that comes from the bottom up for those workers demanding across the board, across the wood frame industry, better working conditions, better wages, better safety. That's kind of the direction the campaign is going. It's been going on for about a year and a half now. We've been having meetings of non-union wood framers, from 60 to 80 a meeting. Most of the meetings are all in Spanish, as the majority of them are Latino workers.
Have you been able to improve conditions for some of these workers, even without having a union recognition?
It's tough to say, honestly. I mean, we've had guys that have been fired for speaking to us. There's been some abuse to these workers so far.
So you've actually been able to get people back on get back wages or whatever?
Yeah, and we've been able
to help
some people.
So you've been able to show people?
Yeah, we've been able to show them, you know, what we're about and what we mean, you know, and that's really what it's been growing this campaign, you know. Like Jason said, it's been a year and a half strong. We had three Latino organizers, Juan Sanchez, Samuel Murillo, and Roger Garcia, who started this, and they took the bull by the horns. They've just really done so much work in this campaign and gotten it to this point. And you know, we're just all holding on and trying to keep it going. It's a lot of work, and these guys deserve it. They deserve it. Their families, they deserve it. They deserve all these things, and they're finally really getting to the point where they know they do, and they're like, okay, well, let's, you know, we're here. Let's do something, you know. Really growing it, so.
And sometimes when we have a campaign like this, any union campaign where they, where the boss is starting to notice a growing dislike of the wages and working conditions, it's it, it often happens that they start paying them more and talking about, hey, we're all family here. So people start being treated a little bit differently. You know, we have people from across the wood frame industry wearing union shirts already on job sites. Let's say CISA Plede, 27 an hour, which is the multifamily wood frame wage that's being demanded right now. So it's starting to grow. I think it's going to grow more in the next few months to come. It's growing bigger.
So si se puede is the slogan of the farm workers union, and very popular Chicano Latino movement slogan. Yes, we can. Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering if you're taking any of this to like a lawmaking, taking it to the legislature and to trying to get laws passed that would prevent wage theft. Have you gone that route at all, or is it strictly just organizing?
Well, the Carpenters Union has worked on many things around the construction industry around wage theft. Like, it's not particularly a main part of the campaign, but our union has worked on those issues through our political organizers for many, many years. You know, apprenticeship set aside, safety rules. We've been doing that since I've been a member of the union. It's not particularly connected with this campaign, but that is something our union has done for many, many years.
So the Pacific Northwest Council of Carpenters recently adopted a resolution titled Mobilize Labor to Stand Against Racist and Fascist Hate Groups. So tell us a little bit more about what this is about and what does it mean in practice? How did you get to this position?
It was talked about amongst not just the carpenters, but some other construction unions, particularly the painters, which some of our members are very friendly with. We got to the point where we saw, especially with the current administration now, and wages and working conditions across the country being under attack, and the current administration trying to blame another group of people for our wages and working conditions going down. And we thought this actually needs to be talked about. It's a huge issue in our industry. So we decided that we should pass a resolution titled to mobilize labor to stand against racist and fascist hate groups. We've seen like racist groups and fascist groups on the rise, and especially in anti-immigrant attacks on immigrants, a big anti-immigrant movement in the United States recently. So we figure that if we're going to change the course of that, it needs to actually be talked about with inside our unions. And one of the things the resolution says, that actually it's not just a feel good thing where like, hey, we're against these things, but part of it actually states, whereas if the U.S. labor movement is to rebuild its strength during a period of racist organizing attacks, that must take up the struggle against white supremacy and white nationalism, not as an abstract debate, but part of a social and political organizing agenda. And that's what we're trying to do in the Carpenters with backing immigrant rights groups to bringing the discussion about in our own union.
So how can our listeners stay informed and help out with your organizing?
They can follow us on our Facebook page, which is Pacific Northwest Regional Council of Carpenters Facebook, or they can go to our website, www.northwestcarpenters.org.
So we can find out about future actions on
the
Facebook page.
Yeah, you can follow those and you can get more information on that.
Are there any particular actions coming up that you want our listeners to be involved with?
At this time, no. Not that I know, Jason.
I understand
right
there's
now.
Something happening on May 1st.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sorry about that. Local 1503 has endorsed the PSU May Day demonstration, and we will be there. We'll have a speaker from our wood framing campaign, and then we will march to the main May Day march.
Right on.
So that's at noon on May 1st, huh? PSU.
Yeah, PSU.
Okay, so that wraps it up for Labor Radio this Monday and every Monday from 6 to 6:30 p.m. We've been talking with Marcus Rodriguez, thank you so much, and Jason Checkler of the Carpenters Local 1503, and Marcus is from Local 146. Thanks to our engineer, Danielle Parker. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline. Thanks, Jamie.
Right on.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Sexual Assault Resource Center's 40th anniversary fundraiser on Thursday, April 27th at 5 p.m. at Echo Trust in Portland. The Sexual Assault Resource Center was founded in 1977 to promote social justice by eliminating sexual violence in our community through education, support, and advocacy. Their fundraiser features Moody Little Sister and DJ Mr. Moo Moo and more. Again, that's the Sexual Assault Resource Center's 40th anniversary fundraiser on Thursday, April 27th at 5 p.m. at Echo Trust, 721 Northwest 9th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can all